From Buck's studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, and I'm here with family doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question, the number to call is 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, we have some topics to talk about today, Zorba.
We're going to talk about women and equality when it comes to alcohol consumption, some interesting data over time, and we're going to talk about omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids, how we should cut the omega-6s and increase the omega-3s in order to improve our obesity rates. Some very provocative, interesting data.
And a very provocative, interesting recipe today, Zorba.
Yes, honey, sriracha roasted Brussels sprouts. Do you like Brussels sprouts?
You know, in limited quantities. I like them. I like them oven roasted best.
You know what? They grow on you. You know, when I was a kid,
well, they grow on the ground.
Yeah, they do grow on the ground. But they kind of look a little like warts. Anyway, if you like Brussels sprouts,
you're selling
them honey, sriracha roasted Brussels sprouts are for you.
All right. Looking forward to that. To the phones we go now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Our first caller joins us from Brooklyn, New York. Hi.
Aloha.
Hi, aloha from New York.
Hi, Zorba.
Hi.
What can we do to help you out today?
I have a family member and a dear friend who I see on occasion, and when we get together, we do what people do. We like to go out and eat, and, you know, we'll sit down, we'll have a great meal, we'll order appetizers, dinner, a lot of times we'll have desserts and drinks, and we have a good time, but when we're done, usually, you know, what you do after you have a huge meal, there's a little bit of, you know, kind of post-mortem food kind of shaming where you feel like, oh, I ate a lot. And the situation with her is she is, you know, she's a healthy woman, but she is very overweight. And so what happens is she talks about, you know, her weight after these meals, and she kind of, you know, has these self-deprecating comments where she kind of, you know, shames herself, you know, and says things like, well, this is the reason I'm so large, and, you know, this is why I'm so fat. And my instinct when I hear these things is just to kind of brush them aside and say, no, you know, you look great, you look awesome, and just kind of not make too much of a deal about it. But what I'm curious is, because it happens quite frequently, it's not even just after these meals, it's, you know, when we're together, is, you know, am I doing her a disservice by just not, you know, saying too much of it, not making a big deal of it? My question is, I'm questioning whether, you know, she really, you know, wants kind of some positive affirmation about how she looks, or if she's kind of asking for help, and, you know, if she is reaching out because she needs encouragement and, you know, advice as to kind of how to handle this situation.
You know, I deal a lot with obesity, and this is a common problem. When is there encouragement? Are people looking to say, yeah, you're okay, you're overweight, but things are all right, you're just fine? Or are they saying, really, I want to lose weight, what should I do? And it's very, very hard to determine exactly how to approach the subject. So let me ask you a few things. Obviously, this is somebody you're really close with.
Yeah.
How long has she been overweight?
I would say probably in the past 5 years.
In the past 5 years. So yeah, 10 years
after,
ago.
After having children.
So 10 years ago, it wasn't like this at all. In other words, 10 years ago, she wasn't at the weight that she is right now.
No.
Mm-hmm. Does she ever talk to you at all? Say, you know, I'm trying to figure out how to lose weight. She ever had any discussion about her weight that has been serious rather than self-deprecating?
No.
Never.
So nothing solution-oriented.
Mm-hmm. No.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't think – I'll tell you something. I don't think there's an opening unless the person actually gives you that opening and gives you permission to go in and say, you know, you know, open it up and say, you know, I'm really trying to lose weight. And then you can have the discussion about suggestions that you might have. And then that's a whole different realm. I don't think that's what she's asking for. I think at the end of the meal, what she's saying is, I ate a lot and I'm really okay. Am I not? I think that's kind of what she's probably saying because she's finished the meal. But I've got to ask a question. Are you okay with your weight that you have? Are you of a different weight than she is?
I am. am. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm healthy.
So, what's the difference in how you actually sit and eat as a meal? Do you finish the meal?
She does most of the ordering. You know, like she'll be like, "Let's order apps. Mm-hmm. Let's have dessert," and I'm just kind of along for the ride and just like, "Yeah, sure." That's
Well, one opening, I'll tell you one opening you can have. I mean, one opening can be there is, why don't we go out and then you do the ordering? I mean, every other time you go out and you say, "Hey, let's go out to eat. I'm going to do the ordering." And you go out and you do appetizers and salad and then a little dessert, no main meal. In other words, that's another way to sort of do it without ever saying anything. Mm-hmm. You pick the restaurant, you pick the food, you do the ordering. And then if she decides she wants to order more because she's hungry, she's then giving you the answer. You know what I mean? Without actually saying something, you're actually in a behavioral situation where you say, "Hey, I want to go out to this restaurant. Let me do the ordering this time. You do the ordering. I'm going to do the ordering. I'd like to pick what I want." She's then going to understand because she's obviously close to you what's going on. And I think you're going to have some nonverbal communication there that's going to lead you to the right way. Because you've got to have an opening before you discuss anything. And then the reality is she may want some help, in which case you're a relative, you're close to her, you really can give her some help, and you can do it.
Here's a thought, too. Maybe, do you do activities other than getting together for a meal? Like maybe it's, "Hey, let's go for a walk in the park and maybe sit down for a picnic-y snack." You do have a couple parks, I think, in New York City. Right?
Oh, sure. Yeah, plenty. Yeah.
There's a little postage stamp called Central Park in there if you want to take the subway over.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, those are things, too, that we, you know, socially when we get together.
And Rob brings up an important point. We often get together around food, and we don't tend to get together around exercise. And frankly, getting together on exercise is kind of another way to lead her towards thinking about other things in her life besides food that, once again, may help her. Once again, this is a very difficult problem. Yeah. This is not an easy problem. There's no absolute solution. So I hope I've given you some ideas to think about on how to approach this because it's a sensitive topic.
Exactly. Yep. No, this has been helpful.
Well, good. Good luck to you and your relative.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Take care.
And one thing that I seem to hear again and again, Zorba, is one thing that doesn't work when it comes to obesity and weight loss is guilt and shame.
Oh, yeah. Guilt
and shame. Those just add to the stress that leads to more eating in a lot of
cases. Nagging, what are you doing? None of those.
So she's on the right track. Doesn't sound like she's doing that.
No, she wants to help. And the reality is the person has to give you an opportunity to help because it's a very private thing.
Right.
And unless they open the door, you can't talk. You shouldn't even go there.
Before we go back to our callers, Zorba, a topic this week, women, men, and alcohol.
Yeah, women, men, and booze. And let's talk about this. I want to talk about something that's very interesting. Men and women, in many ways, are catching up in lots of situations in our society. When it comes to work, for instance, when I went to medical school, we had the largest number of women ever in the University of Illinois medical school class, 8%. That
8%.
Was considered to be huge. And now, of course, it's around 50%. My daughter's a doctor, and half the doctors today graduating in most medical schools are women. Half are men. When it comes to smoking, I was taught when I was in medical school that lung cancer was a male disease because it affected male 10 to 1 over women. And now, of course, men and women are almost equal because when it comes to smoking, men and women are almost equal. When it comes to alcohol and booze, it appears to be the same thing. So this was a study published in the BMJ, British Medical Journal, looked at alcohol consumption back to the 1890s. In the 1890s,
over a century,
there was up to a 12-fold difference in how much alcohol men drank versus how much alcohol women drank in some studies. In other words, men were boozers. Women would have a drink every so often on Friday night or Saturday night or at a wedding or so on. Very, very rarely. And then they looked at better data from around the 1948 to 2014. They looked at any alcohol drinking, problematic alcohol drinking, alcoholic type alcohol drinking, and it turns out that women are catching up with men. Now, from a consumption point of view, we're drinking far less than we used to. If you look back to the 1750s, okay, let's go back to the 1750s. Mm-hmm. The beverage of choice in the morning among the New Englanders, when the Dutch were there and the New Englanders, what did the Dutch drink? They drank coffee. What did the New Englanders drink when they got up in the morning?
As I understand, I think I know this one, rum.
That's right. They had a glass of rum. They got up in the morning. They had a glass of rum for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. They
That's
were soused all the time. And, of course, they didn't have ibuprofen to be able to help them with their joints, but they had rum. The New Englanders drank roughly 4 to 6 times the alcohol consumption that we drink today.
Wow.
And alcohol consumption has gone down, but alcohol consumption among women over time has actually gone up because they are approaching men as they are approaching equality in the workplace, in the home place, and everywhere else. So I just think it's an important take-home message. I am not a teetotaler. I mean, I think it's okay to have a drink. I'm not a teetotaler at all. But the issue really has to do with things like binge drinking. Wisconsin is number one in binge drinking in the country. I am not proud of that. And people who say, I'm not an alcoholic, I only drink on the weekend. If you go out and you drink on the weekend to get drunk every single weekend, you are an alcoholic. You just don't drink during the week. And you run the risks of alcoholism. So I think it's important to get that message out to women because we often think of alcoholics as men.
Usually you think equality, well, that's good news. And it could be if it was men are drinking less or men are problem drinking less, and that's why we're seeing this convergence. That doesn't, if we're reading this right, that doesn't look like what's happening. Actually, women are now more prone?
Well, they're more prone than they used to be. Absolutely. They're more prone than they were 10, 20, and 30 years ago. We're reaching what's called sex convergence, where we're doing exactly the same thing, not only in the workplace, but also in the party place, if you will. So if you're a man, if you're a woman, make sure that you look at something, if you're binge drinking, that you should stop doing that. That's the issue that comes on it. That's the healthy issue. Alcohol is okay to consume in moderation for men and for women.
So advice here, Zorba, somebody comes to you in the office and says, yeah, I think I have a problem with binge drinking. I'm worried I might be alcoholic. What kind of things do you tell a patient in that instance?
Well, then they have to drink less. They may have to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. We may send them to an AODA, Alcoholics and Other Drug Abuse Counselor. It's really a matter of taking action. It's usually not the person who comes into my office and says I'm a binge drinker. It's usually a friend, a relative, a consort of the person that says, you know, so-and-so is a binge drinker. And I'll tell you something very interesting. They may come in the office and say, my wife is binge drinking. What do I do? It's very interesting because there's HIPAA, which means there's information that I should not share. Now, if somebody gives me information freely, it's very, very interesting. And I always tell the person, you have to go back and tell your loved one, you told me about it, because otherwise I can't carry on that conversation.
Right.
It really would not be proper. So drink less if you're binging. That's the key.
We'll go back to our callers now, Zorba, at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for Zorba, we'll go now to Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yeah, I have a recurring, and it's been for quite a few years, wart on my finger, and I also have a wart on my right heel. And I've tried everything. I've had them lasered. I've had frozen. I've had surgically removed. And I even tried the old, I heard Dr. Zorba once time talk about duct tape. But the only problem with duct tape, people ask me, what's that duct tape on your finger for?
Just tell them it's help you remember something if you don't want to talk about the warts.
And duct tape, actually, with plantar's warts, are usually quite effective. It takes about, you've got for the normal plantar wart, obviously not for yours, but if you have normal plantar warts, you put a duct tape on, you leave it on, put it on for 7 days, literally 24/7, for about 4 to 6 weeks, we usually work. Once a week, you take it, you pair it down with an emery board, and that'll usually do it. So you've had
lasered.
Yeah, laser treatment.
You said you had frozen?
I've had it frozen. Mm-hmm. I've actually had the one on my foot. I went to a dermatologist.
Okay.
And unbeknownst to me, he took almost half my heel off.
Oh, that can be very serious. Have you had an injection into that with Candida antigen? It's an injection.
No, I have not. I've not heard of that.
That would be
because I figured that maybe there's some new news on the war on warts.
Well, there's no, the news on warts, warts come and go. They're a virus, and, it infects us. It stays there, and then our body develops a reaction to it, which is what we feel. There's something called a Candida injection. Now, Candida is yeast, and it's yeast that is in our body. We live with Candida. It lives with us. We commingle together. And there is an injection, a Candida antigen injection, which you put into the wart. It causes an inflammation within there. And often when everything else fails, one or two or three injections with Candida into the wart, painful when it's on the foot, believe me, it does not feel good, but painful when it's on the foot, can often get rid of that wart. I would highly recommend that you talk to either your family doc or your dermatologist and say you want to try the Candida or Candida. That's how some people pronounce it, injection.
Yeah, not Canada, the country. Candida.
No, not Canada. It's not.
Well,
Canada.
You might be singing "Old Canada" if I have a shot in the finger. But that could be pretty painful, these injections. Like, I have one on my forefinger. And
There were a couple. I have a question for you. How much does the wart bother you?
A lot.
A lot. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, the one on the forefinger bothers me because, first of all, it's unsightly, and then the other thing is when it gets dry out, they crack.
Okay.
I had worked in a wet environment. So
how long have you had the warts?
Oh, my God. I bet you I've had that for 25 years.
Oh, wow. That is a long time.
So you're willing to try this injection, I bet, if you've been putting up with this for 25 years.
I've had everything else. I mean, I'm willing to try just about anything other than amputation. But
call. No amputation for you.
I'm with that.
Call your doctor. Ask for the Candida or Candida. I never thought about the fact that Canada, thinking of the yeast, and you're thinking of the country.
Right.
But that's what you need. You need to try that injection and see if that'll work.
I'll think of the song Candida.
That sounds great.
Thank you very kindly.
You're welcome.
Good luck with that. We stand on guard for thee when it comes to warts. Can I tell you a gross story about warts before
of
I go
course,
on? Zorba?
Of
so
course.
I feel for this guy because I had warts all over my hands for a while in my college years. Finally, I went and I had them frozen off. And I had on some of them, they just went away. Some of them, I had these massive blood blisters. They stuck off about, half an inch by three quarters. I went in, so I don't think this is normal. I went back to the office. The nurse takes a look at it and says, "Hold on. Hey, come here, everybody." And she called over all the other nurses, like, "Have you ever seen a blood blister this big?" It was disgusting. Yeah, it was horrible. Really painful. That was worse than the wart for a while. But it eventually worked. It went away. I will not describe the process
a reaction that was incredible.
So I could have ended up in
a medical journal. So when they came over, they looked at it, so everyone was looking at your reaction.
Yeah, wow. They were pretty impressed.
Yeah, you see, maybe
this.
That was part of the reason the warts went away.
Yeah.
Maybe they just needed somebody to concentrate on those warts mentally to try to get rid of those warts. It might have been, a psychological reaction to the warts that helped get rid of them.
It could work. You can join in with your questions for Zorba at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before the break, we've learned over the years that our listeners don't always agree with you.
If you can imagine.
So let's fire up another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. The following email came to us from a listener named Mike. He writes, "Dr. Zorba, I love your show. You seem to be dead spot on in most of your diagnoses."
Most.
The key word there.
Okay. Most is good.
"However, you are wrong in the instance of the runner caller when you discounted shoes as a possible cause for her shin splints. I am an old-time runner," Mike says, "having run about half dozen marathons and one double marathon." Wow. "Through the years, I have several times cured a case of shin splints by switching the shoes I wore." Mm-hmm. "The way I understand it is if shoes are either worn out or not properly designed, they allow a rocking back and forth motion laterally while running. Runners should always save their old shoes, so if one gets shin splints, they can go back to an old pair to see if that fixes the problem instead of doing the expensive experiment of buying new shoes. If one gets shin splints after running in new shoes, the shoes may not be poorly designed, just be incompatible with the runner's feet." What do you think?
That's really good advice. And I sort of remember that call. I mean, I do get a number of calls from it. I remember that one exactly. But I basically said they needed new shoes. And I think his point is you can go back to old shoes and that will often fix the problem. That is great advice. And you know what? I stand corrected. Ta-da! And I do make mistakes.
All right, so experiment with those shoes. Might work on the shin splints. Did you hear Zorba miss something? Let's keep him on his toes. Just post on our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up along with more of your calls and another interesting topic to discuss right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, sitting in for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number again is 1-800-462-7413. If you have a question for the good doc, but before we get back to the phones, tell us, Zorba, about our recipe today, honey sriracha roasted Brussels sprouts.
Yeah. Now, the first question I have is, Brussels sprouts are spelled B-R-U-S-S-E-L-S.
Brussels.
So why don't we call them Brussels sprouts with an S. We call them Brussels sprouts. Why do we drop the S?
Well, as people who work in radio from time to time, Zorba, those S's back to back, it's hard to distinguish Brussels sprouts.
Okay,
you have to stop mid-sentence.
Okay, okay.
So
now,
that's why I do it.
What about sriracha sauce?
Yeah, now that's a tough one.
S-R-I-R-A-C-H-A. So it should be sriracha sauce. Why do we say sriracha sauce versus sriracha sauce?
Again, double R's back to back are tough. I'm guessing, and I don't know this, I'm guessing in the original language, it's something like sriracha or something like that where it distinguishes.
I don't think we could read it in the original language.
Well, I could.
Which is Vietnamese.
Right.
You know, which doesn't, I mean, it's Greek to me, but obviously it's not Greek.
I don't think Greek and Vietnamese are that closely related.
Now, do you like Brussels sprouts? When I was a kid, I hated Brussels sprouts.
What kid wouldn't? But I've rediscovered them in the oven roasted form. Oven roasting has saved a lot of vegetables for me. It's turned me around.
Totally different.
I don't want to eat them all the time.
Totally.
Even that way.
Now, I am a home gardener. I do not garden like I used to, but one of the wonderful things about growing Brussels sprouts is that they would still now be in my garden in November because they can stay there. No, they can just stay outside.
Oh, really?
They stay outside until the hard freeze. And it's wonderful. They come in this wonderful sprout. You know, it's kind of
like on the stalk.
Big, giant stalk.
I've seen that at farmer's markets. I love buying Brussels sprouts on the stalk.
They're wonderful on the stalk. So, start out with 1.5 pounds of Brussels sprouts. And if you've only had Brussels sprouts steamed, try this. They taste different.
Okay, we're starting off with 1.5 pounds of Brussels sprouts. Take them off the stalk if they're on the stalk. You don't need the stalk.
No, you don't need
the stalk.
2 tablespoonfuls of extra virgin olive oil.
2 big tea extra virgin olive oil.
You're going to have some kosher salt.
All right, kosher salt.
1 tablespoonful of sriracha sauce. And, you know, we did a book. We did a whole cookbook, if I remember, Carl, a while back, we did the cookbook called the Sriracha Cookbook, and that was really
Carl's good. Nodding.
Yeah, Carl's nodding. I mean, it was everything sriracha.
Nothing but sriracha.
Do. Nothing
sriracha
but
in a bowl.
Sriracha.
Drink it up.
drink sriracha. That's it. 3 tablespoonfuls of honey.
3 big tea honey.
And a lime juice. Do not use lime juice. You must get a fresh lime.
You're
going to juice.
You juice that fresh. I like this combination of our chili sauce, honey, and lime. Fresh lime. That's
sweet,
a great combo.
You've got a little salt. You've got texture from the Brussels sprouts. You've got olive oil, creamy. And then, of course, you've got,
the tang and
everything. So preheat the oven to 400 degrees. Cut off the stem of each of the Brussels sprouts. Pull off any yellow outer leaves. They kind of look like little cabbages.
That's kind of mini cabbage.
I mean, that's what they look for. Place the sprouts in a large bowl. Drizzle with olive oil. Season generously with kosher salt. Toss it to coat. Then place it on a single layer on an aluminum foil lined baking sheet. That's what I would recommend. Aluminum foil lined baking sheet. I don't think a parchment baking sheet would work here. And you don't need aluminum to line it, but then you don't have to clean it, which is what I like. Roast it for 30 to 45 minutes. Shake the pan a few times during the cooking process so that it doesn't get stuck there until they're crisp and golden on the outside, tender on the inside. In the meanwhile, Take the sriracha sauce, honey, and lime in a small bowl. Season again with kosher salt to taste. Remove the sprouts from the oven. Transfer to a bowl. Drizzle with the sauce. Toss it lightly and serve. And I promise you, you will get lots of compliments on this. It's delicious. It's simple. It's easy. I like simple, delicious, and easy.
I like this. This sounds great. And my tip for Brussels sprout roasting, I cut them in half, especially if they're big.
Sure, sure.
That way, they don't roll around.
They don't
when you're
roll
trying to
around.
Roll that's off the that's cutting
right.
surface,
that's right. Cutting
whatever,
them in half is a
cut them in half, and they cook
Perfect.
Up a little faster. And
Perfect.
I like getting them just Perfect. A little bit of char, not
that's right. little char.
Not nuked, not charcoal, yeah. just a little
yeah.
bit.
So you don't
to
want them. You don't want them pure black nuked.
Right.
You just
no, no, no.
want a little blackness on there. But actually, that adds to the taste because when
exactly,
you look at it,
yeah.
that adds a lot to the taste to it.
Yeah, this would be good. This would be a good holiday side.
Yeah,
Brussels
anytime,
sprouts.
Anytime. And you know what's really neat? If people want to, they can on their smartphone, unless they still have a dumb phone only, they can on their smartphone go to our website, ZorbaPastor.org, or of course find it through Facebook, and you can find this recipe. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
They can find it on their phones.
Yeah, on their phone. Phones
they just
shocking.
Turn. They go to the phone and turn the crank.
It's amazing. Turn
ask
the
for
crank.
A party line.
That's right. Actually, my wife the other day said, "Does it cost to call information?" And I thought, I haven't called information
that's,
in a decade. 411? Is that still information?
It,
does
it still,
it still
exists.
Work?
I'm pretty sure it still exists. We'll have to put that to the test sometime. Well, here's a number that we do know works. 1-800-462-7413. That's the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. Maybe a dispute over a health-related issue to
a
resolve.
A dispute? Come on. We don't get disputes.
Yeah, well, you can call disputes. Judge Zorba, 1-800-462-7413. Pro, con on Brussels sprouts, maybe.
I love it.
Well, we have a caller who's called that very number in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Hi. I have a little problem, and it's little. About 2 years ago, I was spreading some mulch. I do not know where the mulch was from, but I sit down when I spread it, and obviously I sat on either a little snake or a spider.
Oh,
not
wow.
sure what, but it definitely felt
wait,
it.
Wait a minute. You sit down on the mulch when you spread it?
Yes, because I have a bad back.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay.
After I finished spreading all the mulch and went in and cleaned up, I looked at it, and it was black, like a little black.
Mm-hmm.
And I put some camphophonique on it, which
yeah.
is what my mother always...
My mother used the same thing, by the way. Used the same thing. I love it. I love it. In fact, every time I smell the camphophonique, I think of my mother.
Uh-huh.
And it's very interesting. And my Aunt Lee, who lived across the street, that turned my mother on to camphophonique. It's an old, old, old remedy.
Old remedy. Well, I'm a little...
Wait a minute. Where's the bite? Where did this occur?
On my bottom?
On your bottom. Okay.
On
your buttock.
And you said this was a couple years ago.
Yes, it was.
And you're calling about it today, so I'm guessing it didn't just go away.
Well, you can still see where it was, but the problem is that ever since it happened, I went to the doctor. He said it's healing nicely. I don't know what it was that bit you, but it seems to be okay. But it itches. Mm-hmm. I mean, itches, and it has ever since then. If I drive or sit for a period of time, it has to be scratched.
Got it. So it has to be scratched no matter what. And that
right.
means that you are scratching your butt.
Yes.
Which you want to steer clear of in a lot of formal social settings.
Yes, I would like that.
I got the image. I've got the image. You're at a state dinner with the governor of your state, and all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're going, I got to do it. Sitting there at this formal dinner. I don't care if I'm wearing a formal dress. Yeah. Honey, I just got to do it. I just have to do it. I'm going to get back to the mulch for a second. So,
okay.
By the way, one of the things you can do that I have around my house, I am going to give you some mulch advice, is I have a chair that I use that I can sit on when I'm actually doing things like weeding and spreading mulch.
A chair.
And it keeps you slightly above the ground.
Oh, it's
like
a low
three
chair.
Or 4 inches.
Okay.
above the ground. And I highly recommend, so that you don't get bit again, that you consider a chair next time.
Oh, this would be good for the back, though, too. That is.
I also have to tell you, one of the things people ask me is, what's the most unusual question you get on the air?
Mm-hmm.
And I was just interviewed the other day, and I said, well, I get lots of questions, this question and that question. But you know what? This gets into the unusual question.
Okay, yeah.
That I get on the air
butt
pile.
Bite. Yeah, okay.
It's the buttock itch from sitting on the mulch question. That's what it comes from.
All right, well, we've got nothing for you. Thanks for calling.
No. So how big is the buttock bite?
Mm-hmm.
How big is it compared to a pencil eraser head?
About that size.
About that size. Okay, I do have a suggestion, and it's a possibility. There are two suggestions.
Okay.
Number one, sometimes a steroid shot into that will actually get rid of the itch. Either a Depo-Medrol, which is a steroid that we put in that stays there, a drug called Kenalog triamcinolone, but it's known as Kenalog, into that area may actually stop the itch. That's one possibility. The other possibility is your doctor takes what's called a punch biopsy. It's a 6-millimeter biopsy. You freeze it. You take that bit of skin out of there, stitch it up, and it heals, and that irritation disappears. There's also the possibility that a topical steroid ointment or cream. Have you used that on top of this?
No.
I would start with that. Okay. So.
Oh. Okay.
Kenalog cream twice a day for 3 to 4 weeks. If that fails, what I would do is go to a steroid shot such as Depo Depo Medrol, Medrol, right in that area, right in the area. And if that fails, and I continue to scratch my butt, then I would go to actually a biopsy, take it out, look at it, and sometimes that'll get rid of it.
That sounds like a plan of attack.
And once again, you need to go and buy this little chair so you don't put your tender dairy air on the mulch next time you spread it.
That's true.
All right.
Thank you so much, Doctor.
Thank you. Good
Thanks
luck.
For your
Good
call.
Luck. This is Zorba Pastor on your garden. No, so this is like those low beach chairs where you're sitting. You're just at like just.
They're like a
the
beach
level?
Chair, but they have handles on them. They're wonderful, and you pull them out. Actually, we're going to put it on our website, Carl.
We're going to find this.
Absolutely. He's just saying yes. Thumbs up on the website, zorbapastor.org. I'm going to put down the chair that I bought. But all seriousness, I bought it because not because I got bit in the butt.
Right.
I got it because I wanted something soft for my derriere while I was weeding.
That sounds very reasonable. Well, let's maybe in the next pledge drive, we have the Zorba Pasture on Your Health.
Derriere chair.
Garden chair.
That's right. Garden chair. Well, monogrammed. I'm going to monogram them.
You can call in with your stories of being bitten on the butt or really anything related to your health or lifestyle. 1-800-462-7413.
Send them in, folks. Not the butt jokes, but the butt problems, because we're here to help you.
Right. Maybe no pictures. 1-800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, let's tackle a listener email question. This one is from a listener named Linda. She writes, "Hi, Zorba. Any suggestions for a baker's cyst besides wrapping it with an ACE wrap? It's particularly aggravated by biking and walking on uneven ground, like walking in the woods. First, what's a baker's cyst?
I assume
it's something you get while baking.
No. Baker's cyst is fluid that's in the back of the knee. So you've got the kneecap in the front of the knee. A baker's cyst is in back of the knee. And it was probably named after Dr. Baker.
I thought this was something you get while baking.
Put it out of my mind. But basically, it's fluid that collects there.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's very difficult to get rid of. Usual treatment is an elastic bandage or an ACE wrap. And sometimes if it doesn't get better, surgeons will actually go in. It's not just removing the fluid on the cyst. They actually have to do a surgical procedure to keep the fluid from forming again. So one treatment, a very common treatment, is physical therapy on a regular basis and keeping the thing on an elastic wrap all the time except when you're sleeping for about 1 month to 2 months. And sometimes that can just get the cyst to stop filling up with fluid, and then often it recurs and it doesn't recur. The other issue is that quite often it means there's something going on in your knee. In other words, there's another problem that's in your knee, and physical therapy, doing proper exercises, can make a big difference, especially an exercise called a quad set. We'll put the quad set exercise on our website, zorbapastor.org. We'll give you some good knee exercises, but it's the quad set exercise that you do twice a day, 10 to 20 sets in the morning, 10 to 20 sets in the evening, that can sometimes force the fluid out of that Baker's cyst and make things better.
That sounds way better than the surgery, if that's an option.
Much better. You always want to go, when in doubt, of course, nobody wants surgery unless they need it. And often in medicine, we don't pay enough attention to trying to rehabilitate the body in a natural way. And that's what physical therapy is about. Often it's just teaching you how to do the exercises correctly so you can do them at home.
Linda, I hope that helps out. Send us another note and let us know if you get that physical therapy and if it makes a difference. Do you have a question for Zorba? He's happy to assist. Just tweet us, post it to our Facebook page, or send it in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More calls to come, as well as another interesting topic and our Quacking Up segment. It's all coming up on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Rob Ferret here, singing for Tom Clark with Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Zorba, before we take another call, another topic, this one on obesity and omega fatty acids.
That's right. So first of all, we know there's too much obesity in the world. In fact, 1.5 billion people are now overweight worldwide. And it's not as simple as calories, but we know there are a lot of issues that have gone on. So we have to look not just at sugar and fat, but the type of fatty acids that we're actually eating. And there are omega-6s and omega-3s. So if we look at at what occurred over the period of our lifetime before modern farming techniques, there were relatively the ratio of omega-3s and omega-6s were about the same. In other words, we had about the same amount of omega-6 and omega-3. But now what happens is we have large amounts of omega-6 fatty acids in the food chain. Now, the reason has to do with this. It has to do with, for example, if we look at beef, grass-fed beef will have more omega-3s and less omega-6s, roughly an equal amount when you eat anything that's beef-wise. But if you look at the way beef is raised today with modern farming techniques that often use, for instance, sunflowers, corn oil, and such, we end up having a lot of omega-6s and not as much omega-3. And these particular authors say, we've got to look at our farming techniques and begin to change them to a more natural way.
Okay, so the balance has shifted. We're not getting enough omega-3s. We're getting too many, or it's out of whack.
It's
the balance.
Out of whack.
Too
they
much
say,
omega-6
you know
compared to
it's
omega-3.
It's 16 to 1.
So
in other
where it
words,
used to be
we are
even.
Consuming 6, roughly. For every 1 gram of omega-3s we're consuming roughly 16 grams of omega-6s.
So
that is a huge difference.
Connect the dots then back to obesity.
Well, the issue is when we look at things, this is one theory of what's actually going on. And the reason is we know that omega-6s tend to promote, for instance, inflammation. They tend to be prothrombotic. The more omega-6s you eat, the more likely you are to actually have a blood clot. They tend up producing more belly fat in belly fat tissue. They end up producing more fat that's called white fat versus brown fat. Brown fat tends to be the more energy storing stuff. In other words, when we look at animal models, we see from animal models that omega-6s are really not good for us and omega-3s are really better for us.
Do we have a takeaway here?
Yeah,
what do we do with
well,
this?
Well, we have a good takeaway. Natural food is better when it comes to beef and other things in terms of cows that are grazing. So in other words, grass-fed cattle is better than corn-fed cattle when we look at it from that point of view. That's one takeaway. Another takeaway may be free-range chickens are better when we eat the eggs from free-range chickens than we have it from chickens that are simply given the regular and usual fare. This is a little bit complex in terms of the energy that we get and the food supply, and it has yet to be worked out. But down with 6, up with 3.
You can join us with a question for Dr. Zorba at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. Back to our callers now. Zorba, we'll go to Fort Pierce, Florida. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
We're Zorba. Doing great here today. Thank you so much for calling. How can we help you out?
Well, I had an interesting incident happen to me. I drive professional truck, and in the truck had bed bugs that I didn't know it for a few months. They must have just had the egg.
Oh, yeah, no. So, interesting incident. That I wouldn't use the word interesting to describe bed bugs in my truck.
Not at all. Not at all.
Well, eventually it became horrendous.
Okay. Okay. That's more. That's kind of more my choice
and they
of
do,
adjective.
And they do become horrendous. They are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's sort of fascinating because bed bugs were thought to be a thing of the past.
Nope.
And that they sort of died out as we had better mattresses and other things, but they have come back with a vengeance.
Yeah.
So how did you discover it?
Yeah.
Well, What was the first sign that you had bed bugs in your truck?
I didn't know they were bed bugs. I thought I was getting bit by spiders.
Mm-hmm.
And
sure.
It would happen at night. I'm a landscaper, so I know what that feels like. So it was itchy, stingy, and
mm-hmm.
that's why I thought it was spiders.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But it kept on going for several months, and I looked all over. I'm like, I don't see any spider webs. And then I was suspicious it was something else. So I looked online, and I did see what bed bugs look like, what the bites look like, and there's residue. So I tore my bed up and looked real carefully. I saw nothing. So it just eventually one day I finally see a bed bug.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, thankfully, diatomaceous earth in my truck, mm-hmm. and I spread it all over my mattress and underneath. And I told my company, they put me in hotels until mm-hmm. I got back to the terminal, mm-hmm. and then I switched trucks. I've never been bit in my new truck.
Good.
I still have sores from being bit.
What are you putting on the sores right now?
I have a salve with rosemary oil, lavender,
okay.
and some other stuff my sister made
Sounds
up.
Good.
It's working really good. They're not infected. It's
mm-hmm.
just... I think it was because I got bit so many mm-hmm. times.
Well, and it's an inflammation. It's an allergic reaction.
Yeah.
By the way, sometimes Benadryl at bedtime will help. Little Benadryl may reduce some of
that. I have a hard time with Benadryl.
Makes you
I
too
really
sleepy?
Do.
Okay. When you shower, what kind of soap are you using?
I use all natural Dr. Bronner's Pine
Good.
Soap.
Dr. Bronner's is fine. Perfect.
Yeah.
Has a nice smell to it. I love Dr. Bronner's.
Yeah.
It's a very natural soap. It has no detergent in it at all. Makes a big difference. That local care is really going to help. And time is going to get rid of this thing.
Yeah.
Whenever you've got any irritation in the skin like this, you want to make sure you have a non-detergent, non-deodorant soap. A lot
yeah.
of people will use like, you know, Lifebuoy and Iris Spring and Dial, and those are not good because they dry your skin. You want something
right.
that's all natural. Then you
yeah.
want to use something on the skin that is anti-inflammatory, either something that is a hydrocortisone cream, not necessary, or a stronger cream, but a natural cream, rosemary oil, and other eucalyptus oils can make a big difference. And then tincture of thyme. In other words, get rid of the bug, and eventually you'll get rid of the itch.
T-I-M-E.
Yes.
Not the herb thyme, because
yeah.
I've heard the herb thyme
right.
heals all wounds.
That's right.
Right.
Rob is just thinking about
right.
the herb thyme, because that's what he always thinks of. Food.
Yeah. Food.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you keep getting better, and I hope your next trip on the road is way less interesting than that one.
Oh, yeah, it always is.
All right. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, yeah, bed bugs, no fun.
No
In the
fun
truck. That's
ever.
I haven't heard of that before.
Ever, ever, ever. And like I said, we thought years ago that bed bugs would disappear, and it's only been in the last, I think it's between 5 and 10 years, that they started to resurface again. They used to be just a thing of the past. Nobody even thought about bed bugs 20 years ago, 10 years ago, and then bang, the infestation has hit America again.
Well, thanks for that call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, let's take a dive now into the murky waters of medical quackery. It's time again for Quacking Up with Dr. Zorba.
Quack it up with Dr. Zorba.
Okay, Zorba, on this segment, we often use the term snake oil when we talk about quackery or fraud, but we've never really talked about actual snake oil.
That's right. Well, the real snake oil, I mean, the true snake oil was not snake oil. When we say a snake oil salesman,
right.
That comes because there was a whole bunch of fake snake oil that came out back in the early 1900s that was rattlesnake oil that didn't do anything other than make things irritating. And so snake oil became the synonym for something that doesn't work. But in fact, snake oil did work. It was a Chinese cure that the Chinese brought when they actually came to California work on the railroad. They were Chinese peasant workers. It was a common thing that was used. It was snake oil that actually contained, believe it or not, omega-3 acids.
There was omega-3s again.
Omega-3 acids that reduced inflammation, so people would rub snake oil on their wounds. They would drink snake oil because they would reduce the inflammation from their joints. Remember, that was before aspirin was common, ibuprofen was common, Tylenol wasn't even invented, all that stuff.
So and they're sore. They're working on the railroad.
That's right, they're doing
tough physical
labor. So the snake
labor.
Oil actually worked, and so people had snake oil. But as soon as you had snake oil, of course, then you had fake snake oil. Fake snake oil became synonymous with snake oil, which then had a bad reputation when, in fact, real snake oil was actually good for you. So the quackery of snake oil actually wasn't quackery.
So you had people going around saying, hey, buy this snake oil. Snake oil really works.
Real
that was right oil. So far.
That's right.
But
that's right.
But if you took these people's stuff, these snake oil salesmen,
that's right.
One thing you weren't getting was oil of snake.
That's right. What happened is the snake oil salesmen were actually giving you rattlesnake oil. And that's funny. Now, I've got to make an analogy here. In Wisconsin, people may not know it, but we produce the best ginseng in the world.
Right.
And we have for the last 100 years, or more than 100 years. The Chinese believe that northern Wisconsin, which produces ginseng, has the best ginseng in the world. But there is snake oil ginseng, which is
ginseng
that comes from other parts of the world that is being marketed as Wisconsin ginseng. And in fact, it should be labeled snake oiled ginseng.
Do you have an example of medical quackery to contribute to this segment? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or, of course, Facebook.
Back to our callers we go now at 1-800-462-7413. We welcome a caller from Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi, Green Bay.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. You have a wonderful show. I'm a long-time listener.
Oh, well, thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. What can we help you out with today?
Well, I'm 62, almost 63 years old, and after many years of kidney stones, my family doctor finally noticed my calcium level was a little above normal in my blood. So he did a PTH test on me, and my PTH at the time of my recent surgery was 130. And they got kind of alarmed about that, and he sent me to a surgeon. I had it removed, and the surgeon and the family doctor is very, very optimistic that my kidney stone creation, or whatever I'm doing to make kidney stones, is going to be pretty much ended immediately.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They got my PTH back to normal. I'm not that optimistic, and that I guess that one of my questions is, you know, should I even get my hopes up that my kidney stones days are over with? I mean, I still have two kidneys full of stones right now that I got to pass, but is it something that I should get my hopes up, or is this just a lot of hype?
How painful has it been when you passed them?
A couple of them put me in the emergency room,
mm-hmm.
And then I had that sonic wave treatment.
Break up the stones, the sound treatment.
Yep, and that was successful mm-hmm. both times, except, well, I shouldn't, this last time, there's one that's extremely big that did not crush.
Yeah, I have to tell you, I've got a big kidney stone, sits in my kidney, my urine is fine, it's fine, and my urologist said, do you want me to put you in the sonic thing to crush it up so we can get rid of it? And I said, what's the benefit? In other words, if it's not actually obstructing anything and it just sits there, it was found by accident just because I had a CT scan for my back, I said, why should I do it? Where's the data? And the data shows if it don't bother you, you don't have to treat it. If you've got a big one in there and it doesn't bother you and it doesn't cause an obstruction, I would do nothing with it. Go with the flow. Probably fewer stones. Call us back in 5 years and let us know the results.
And in the meantime, we are pulling for you. Good luck.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
If you have a question for Dr. Zorba, call in now at 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413 if you have a question for Zorba. Before we head out, Zorba, let's take another listener question. This comes to us from Anne in Pocatello, Idaho. She writes, "Dear Zorba, my son is a freshman in college, and to help him keep up with his workload at the competitive university he's attending, he's considering occasionally taking the stimulant modafinil. Do you know anything about this drug? I'd be interested to know whether or not you consider it a safe way to get through a late-night study session. I've suggested caffeine, but he doesn't like the taste of coffee, and I've warned him against drinking the energy drinks that are so popular. So taking this stimulant, modafinil."
Well, modafinil is used – it's used for sleep disorders. It's often used for people to keep them awake when they're on shift work. It's not exactly the same as Ritalin. It's not the same as Vyvanse. It's not the same exactly, as methamphetamines that we also use, dexamphetamines and methamphetamines that are also used, especially with ADD. But it can be as habit-forming. And so that's, of course, an issue. One of the recommendations that I give is, first of all, caffeine is the most common drug used worldwide because it is a stimulant and works. And so, first of all, you want to try caffeine and see if it works. If he doesn't like the taste of it, you can actually buy caffeine tablets. You can buy things like No-Dose. They may work. They may be mild. He can go to tea if he doesn't like
the taste of coffee. Yeah, there's a lot of kinds of tea out
there. Lots of different tea. I would go to that first. But I must tell you, in competitive universities, roughly 20 to 25%, maybe even up to 30%, actually take drugs like modafinil and Ritalin and other drugs to actually stimulate you. And there's some issues around this. And when I mention issues, I mean, it's not just physiological issues of what we question as a doctor, whether or not you're doing harm to your body. There's no evidence at all that we're actually doing harm to your body. The issue really is whether or not it's safe to use on a regular basis from a point of view of psychologically. And I think the jury is relatively out on this because, frankly, these drugs are in common use, and we haven't seen them abused among people who use them on a regular basis only to try to concentrate. So bottom line, I don't think it's the healthiest thing to do, but I really don't think it's harmful.
Hmm. Yeah, my gut reaction, I'd be leery about taking a stimulant. Just, I don't know, maybe just how I grew up or something like that. I would go with, I mean, and who doesn't like coffee?
You bring up an important point. You would feel leery about it, but here's somebody who actually wants to concentrate, and let's say they're doing something in a highly competitive nature that's difficult, such as physics or chemistry, where they have to concentrate. People who take the drug say, I now can concentrate on this, and when they don't, they say they can't. Well, how different is this than caffeine? The real issue is, what is the abuse potential? Used appropriately, the abuse potential is low. That's the issue. As long as you're not abusing it, you're under a doctor's order, it's okay to do. But I still think caffeine is a better, safer way to go.
Oh, and you're saying do it with a doctor. Don't buy it from the
No, you want to have a clinician who's made the diagnosis, who gives you the drug and does it. You do not want to get it from your friend down the hall. Because among other things, you may be getting fake drugs. Drug.
Snake oil. Maybe. Maybe. Do you have a question for Zorba? Feel free to tweet us, post it on our Facebook page, or send an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org or, again, post it on Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call anytime at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Rob Ferret, sitting in for Tom Clark, asking you to join us on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1119Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.